Okay, Chair Pomfrey, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Let's see. Good morning, members, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the regular meeting of the Lahontan Regional Water Quality Control Board. My name is Pete Pomfrey, and I am the board chair. I want to thank you for listening to our meeting. We welcome your comments, ideas, and participation because they help us to do a better job. Today's board meeting is being conducted during the COVID-19 emergency and is therefore a virtual board meeting. In order to comply with public gathering and physical distancing requirements in the governor's executive orders, there is no physical meeting room. Zeke Turley with AGP Video is hosting our virtual board meeting, and I will ask him to give us some instructions to help run this meeting in a smooth manner. Zeke?
Yes, sir. The most important thing is when you're not speaking, please mute your microphone and try not to talk over each other. Sometimes we have trouble hearing when people are talking at the same time. Other than that, if you're an attendee and you want to speak on an item, please use the raise your hand feature. And have a beautiful meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. We appreciate your patience and understanding during this extraordinary time. At this time, I would like to introduce the other members of the regional board attending via video and teleconferencing. Keith Diaz from Rosamond.
Good morning.
Dr. Amy Horn from Truckee.
Hi there.
Don Jardine from Markleyville.
Good morning.
And Eric Sandell from Truckee. Kimberly Cox from Hellendale is unable to join us this morning. Our executive board staff are here today, and they include Mike Plasiak, our executive officer, our legal counsel, Elizabeth Barrett, and our board clerk, Katrina Fleshman. We will also be joined by other staff members for individual agenda items. For people who only want to listen or watch the meeting, the board's customary webcast is also available. In addition, we are receiving presentations and public comment through a Zoom meeting platform. If you intend to present or comment, you should have submitted a virtual speaker card to our board clerk, Katrina Fleshman, and be in the Zoom meeting room. This meeting is being webcasted and recorded, so please speak clearly. If you think you might be interested in commenting or are experiencing technical difficulties, please contact our board clerk promptly at katrinafleshman@waterboards.ca.gov. For those in the Zoom meeting, your camera will be turned off and you will be on mute until it is your turn to speak. Our board clerk will unmute you when it is your turn. When you are done speaking and the board members have completed asking questions, you will be placed on mute again. With that, we'll go to our first item this morning, which is agenda item number 9, public forum, in which any person may address the water board regarding a matter within the water board's jurisdiction that is not related to an item on this meeting agenda or currently pending before the water board. I do not have any speaker cards for this item. However, if there is anyone who wishes to address the board during public forum, this is your opportunity to do that. Could you please raise your hand or otherwise indicate your desire to participate?
Chair Pomfrey, there is nobody with their hand raised at this time.
Thank you. Turning next then to item 10 of the agenda, and I might add parenthetically, for those of you, item 11, which was a closed session, was dealt with yesterday, so it is not on our agenda today. So item 10 is a discussion of the Lahontan Water Board 2019-2020 accomplishments and strategic narrative. And I'll just start by saying one of our great accomplishments is we are here today.
disagree with that. Chair Pumphrey, I'm Mike Plasiak, Executive Officer for the Lahontan Water Board. Is my audio okay coming in? Because I know that it's not. I'm going to take
it. It is not.
Put it on. Because if it's continue with the, but if I have to, we could just go through the slides.
It's not any better with your video off, Mike.
Not yet.
Okay.
You can use the phone call-in feature. It's next to the microphone, and it's an up arrow.
Yep.
If you look at that, and you can...
audio?
Yeah, you can go to the audio button, and then go to audio settings. Oh, no, not that. Sorry. It should be a phone switch to phone audio.
Yep.
Okay.
Is this working? Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. That's much better.
Okay. I'm going to continue on with the presentation. So if you could put slide number one up, I would appreciate that. Thank you, Zeke. All right. So each year since 2014, your staff have presented the region's priorities and accomplishments during the March meeting. Last year was an exception. No update was provided. As we embark on an organizational culture shift, we are taking a new approach on how we are developing our priorities. Next slide, please. This is an outline of what we'll be talking about today. We'll cover the region's environmental characteristics. We'll talk about organizational challenges. And each of the division managers will talk about the accomplishments over the 2019-2020 fiscal year and also the current fiscal year. Following the accomplishments, I'll present our organizational outlook and our plan to develop priorities for fiscal year 21-22, which we intend to bring to you at a subsequent board meeting. Next slide, please. Our region is, as you can see from this slide, our region is 570 miles long and it covers nearly one quarter of the state of California. Within that region, we've got 700 lakes, over 3,000 miles of streams, and 345 separate groundwater basins. Most importantly, our region is unique among other regions in the state that it has not just one, but two outstanding national resource waters, Lake Tahoe and Mono Lake. The point of this slide is to underscore the challenges that your staff face in applying water quality program requirements throughout a region as vast and as varied in topography, hydrology, geology, and land uses as this region is. Next slide, please. I'm going to just briefly cover performance targets. Since we didn't come to you in March of last year with how we did, I'll let you know that basically performance targets are important measures of our accomplishments that the regional boards focus on each year. And that's what we work with state board to develop those performance targets. The general categories are basin plan amendments, TMDLs adopted, individual permits issued, renewed or updated, inspections, remediation, and closure of cleanup sites, and enforcement. So those broad categories, there's more to what we do as a region, as the board is aware. But with the performance targets that we are accountable to state board, those are the basic categories. So for fiscal year 2019-2020, the region met or exceeded its performance targets in all categories except for one. And even then, I would say it wasn't a shortcoming. We had intended to do 8 NPDES municipal inspections. We did 6, which is not bad given the fact that those inspections occur usually during the spring, usually in the summer, fall, and then in the spring time frame. And we had just gone into the COVID pandemic during the spring, and we were still able to get 6 of the 8 inspections completed. So we did really well last year. With respect to 2020 and 2021, this current fiscal year we're in, State Board did lower performance targets slightly due to staff resource reductions. And I'm going to talk about that in a subsequent slide. But we expect to meet many of our performance targets this year. There'll be a few that may fall short. We're on track, though, I think, for the majority of those performance targets, and this is understandable that we may have a few that we fall short on. And we will update you on a subsequent board meeting on how we're doing. With, you know, given the resource limitations and the challenges we've had over the last 9 months, this has not been business as usual. And we've been doing some workarounds to make things happen. And I think your staff has done a phenomenal job on figuring out new and innovative ways to get the job done. Next slide, please. So here I want to talk about some of the organizational challenges that we've gone through in this last fiscal year. As alluded to in slide 4, we've been working through a number of resource limitations over the fiscal year. And the significant challenges were obviously COVID restrictions. And throughout the fiscal year, we've had to deal with social distancing restrictions, virtual meetings, stay-at-home orders, and other COVID-related restrictions that have impeded staff movement about this vast region. Also, contact tracing. We have 3 staff that have been devoted to COVID contact tracing. These staff are temporarily reassigned to work with county DHHS staff. And so they're fenced off from doing any waterborne tasks. So, and I expect this to continue through this fiscal year and possibly beyond June of 2021. The other thing to bring to your attention is we've had 2 furlough days a month imposed on our work schedule. So that's another impact on available resources. And each staff person effectively has lost 2 days of work per month. The good news is that we expect through some of the windfalls in the state's revenues that we expect those furloughs to be lifted come July 1st. I'll talk about the cannabis program revenue. That was lower than expected over the fiscal year. In the beginning of the fiscal year, the state board ordered the regions to redirect staff in the cannabis program to other assignments within the region. And consequently, our cannabis unit went from 6 staff down to 2. And so now Kathleen Bindle and Alex Spencer work on enforcement and permitting issues. But they're not working just on Lahontan issues. They're also handling the Colorado River Basin region as well. So that's a new twist that's been factored into. So you've got 2 staff that are they're working in 2 regions currently, and that's their full-time job. And they're working in Kathy Baumgartner Poole's unit. One thing I want to point out, though, is that we did have an achievement in the cannabis redirection, or I should say in some of the cannabis work. And I want to give kudos to Carly Nielsen and TJ Millmas Clark. Both were instrumental in the successful oversight of a cannabis enforcement case in Region 7 that included an ACL for $125,000 and a supplemental environmental project. And this was in a disadvantaged community. So it was the first cannabis enforcement case for Region 7. And those 2 of your staff were key players in making that, getting that across the finish line earlier, I should say last week. And this was work that was pre-existing work. They were redirected to do other tasks but they still had some lingering cannabis work that they've had to accomplish. And that goes for the other staff who are redirected as well. There's still some holdover assignments that had to be closed out before they were able to fully devote their time and effort to their reassignments. And lastly, we've had some retirements of key personnel and some staff movements to other opportunities. And certainly we'll be looking at the workforce and seeing, you know, we expect we'll see changes as we go through the years as our workforce, our more of our workforce is reaching that retirement age. So succession planning is vital to our future. Next slide, please. So I'm going to hand this off to the next speaker, is Ben Lettner, acting AEO, and he's been doing a fine job at that. And he'll lead the discussion on division accomplishments, and you'll hear that from the other division managers, and then I'll come back to close out on slide 14. So with that, I would say over to you, Ben.
All right, thanks, Mike. How's my audio? Is it good?
Fine.
I see head nodding. Oops, can we go back to the presentation? Can we go back to slide 6 of the presentation that Mike was providing?
Sorry, I got to get it up. I just lost it. I'll be back.
Okay. Well, while he's working on that, I'll just get started. Good morning, Chair Pomfrey and members of the board. My name is Ben Letton. I'm a division manager in your South Lake Tahoe office of the Lahontan Water Board. I'm also currently the acting assistant executive officer. Over the next couple slides, my colleagues, Scott Ferguson, Patrice Copeland, and I will be summarizing for you several significant accomplishments that we have achieved over the last 2 years. Eric Shea, who is our administrative officer, was unable to present today due to a conflict. So an update on major accomplishments within administration. I will be presenting that slide and reading the script for Eric. The list of accomplishments that we're going to provide you is not exhaustive. Rather, it is a list or summary of some of the major accomplishments that we have achieved over the last 2 years. In other words, projects or efforts that required a big lift to get over the finish line and are worth celebration. But I'd like to caveat that last statement by clarifying that all efforts, projects, permits, and policies that our staff work to develop and complete are worth celebration. In fact, if we were to properly celebrate all the staff accomplishments, my colleagues and I could probably stand here for several hours enumerating the long list of accomplishments and forcing you to attend this meeting well into your lunch hour. But in the interest of time and your stomachs, we won't go nearly that far. And instead, I'll just focus on a couple. So with that, I'll go into several major accomplishments for my division over the last 2 years, and then I'll hand it off to Patrice, followed by Scott. Next slide, please. So for my division, the Compliance and Planning Division, here are three major accomplishments for 2019. The first is the Mojave River Basin Plan Amendment that you adopted in June 2019. As a refresher, this amendment removed the cold water habitat beneficial use from the portions of the Mojave River where it doesn't exist and perhaps never did, and designated a portion of the Mojave River with beneficial uses, the beneficial uses, preservation of biological habitat of significance and rare, threatened, or endangered species. Beneficial uses to recognize and protect critical habitat and special status species. The amendment also provided clarification for the application of site-specific objectives for TDS and nitrate, and recognition of wild and scenic river segments in the Mojave headwaters and throughout the region. The amendment was approved by US EPA in November 2020, and Jennifer Watts was the staff person that worked most on that. The second accomplishment I would like to recognize is the 2018 integrated report that you adopted in November 2019. The 2018 integrated report recommended updates to the Lahontan Region 303D list. Staff assessed data collected by the water boards as well as federal partners and stakeholders and interested parties. The integrated report recommendations were included in the statewide integrated report in October 2020, and we are awaiting US EPA approval any day now. That was a team effort by Dan Sussman's unit. Several staff worked on that. And the final accomplishment from the Compliance and Planning Division for 2019 was adoption of the Climate Change Mitigation and Adaptation Strategy. That should be fresh in your minds from yesterday's item provided by Lori Scribe on the action plan portion of that strategy. So I won't go into detail on that one. Next slide, please. This slide lists the major accomplishments for the Compliance and Planning Division from 2020. The first accomplishment that I'd like to recognize is the development and adoption of two wastewater general orders. The development of these permits were orchestrated largely from our staff working in the cannabis program, and we also coordinated closely with our Victorville office and staff there as well. Both general orders are able to provide regulatory coverage and water quality protection for facilities that discharge a monthly average flow rate of 100,000 gallons or less per day of wastewater. The limited domestic order is focused on wastewater that comes from domestic sources, and the small industrial order focuses on industrial waste streams. The second accomplishment I would like to recognize here is the basin plan amendment to add tribal beneficial uses that the board adopted in September 2020. This amendment adds tribal beneficial uses and their standard definitions to the Lahontan Basin Plan. Subsequent processes will result in designation of waters in the region with these beneficial uses, a process that will require extensive tribal and angler outreach. And I recognize Cindy Wise and Dan Sussman for that effort. Finally, I'd like to acknowledge two big efforts coming out of the division related to irrigated agriculture and bacterial water quality objectives. I have to admit, I cheated a little bit on these two because technically these were items that were brought to you to the board in January 2021, not the calendar year 2020. However, they were originally scheduled for 2020 and the bulk of the effort to prepare these items was conducted in 2020. So I'm counting them. Both of these accomplishments should be fresh in your mind because we brought these two items to the board in January. The Irrigated Lands Regulatory Program development update, we provided the board with a very thorough and comprehensive staff report, which provided an in-depth interpretation of the East San Joaquin Review Order, the Water Code, and the non-point source policy require us to do in terms of addressing water quality issues associated with irrigated ag. And the report went further by recommending four key actions that we can now take and into the future in terms of adding both our obligation to those regulations and known and anticipated surface and groundwater quality issues. In the bacteria water quality objectives board workshop, we provide the board, the public, and key stakeholders with an overview and history of bacteria water quality objectives in the Lahontan region. Staff also provided a menu of options that we may consider in terms of the appropriate basin plan amendment that we should pursue to provide clean water for human uses and the environment for current and future generations. And one more accomplishment that I want to sneak in that's not captured here in this slide is an effort that we launched in 2020 to consolidate our 401 water quality certification program. Previous to this effort, coordination and management of the 401 water quality certification permits were spread across three different units in the South Lake Tahoe office, plus one unit in the Victorville office. Under the leadership and guidance of Doug Cushman and Jan Zimmerman, we have consolidated the program into two groups, one unit in South Lake Tahoe and one unit in Victorville. The benefits of this consolidation have been greater consistency in terms of process and procedures, including templates for 401 permits, better tracking of status of the 401 permits themselves, more consistency and accuracy for budgeting and billing to the 401 program, and improved coordination and consistency between the offices. And I'd like to give a shout out to Liz Van Diepen and Tiffany Steinert, who both played a significant role in this ongoing and important effort. So that concludes my divisional accomplishments. And with that, I'd like to hand this over to Patrice Copeland. Next slide, please.
Good morning, board members. I'm Patrice Copeland, Division Manager for the South Lahontan Basin Division in your Victorville office. As Mr. Plasiak and Mr. Letton explained, we're here to present some of the notable accomplishments for calendar years 2019 and 2020. I will present these for each of the units that I manage, starting with the Land Disposal Program Unit led by Senior Engineering Geologist Ms. Jan Zimmerman. In June of 2019, we adopted the Apple Valley Landfill Revised WDRs. The landfill began operations in 1972 and stopped receiving waste in 1997, was officially closed in 2007. In June of 2019, as you adopted the new corrective action and post-closure WDRs and updated the monitoring and reporting program to establish a corrective action program or CAP to address the effects of a known release to groundwater, establish the post-closure monitoring and maintenance requirements for the facility, and provide general updates to the WDRs and MRP based on the current site conditions and compliance with the California Code of Regulations, Title 27. Most recent monitoring reports show that the detections at the site are within historic ranges and do not indicate a new release or expanding release from the landfill. It was difficult for me to choose just one, so you rarely hear from our DOD unit, so I included more than one for this category. Our Department of Defense and Site Cleanup Program Unit is led by Senior Engineering Geologist Mr. William Muir, or Bill Muir. During 2019, they did pushments. In May of 2019, we received a letter resolving a dispute between the Environmental Protection Agency and the State of California, Department of Toxic Substance Control, and our Water Board for the South Air Force Research Laboratory, or South AFRL, at Edwards Air Force Base, regarding a tetrachloroethylene toxicity values, or PCE values. The dispute was resolved after Mr. Doug Smith went to Washington to meet with all parties and the director of the US EPA, Andrew Wheeler. The dispute centered around vapor intrusion risk as calculated using California's toxicity value preference to use newly promulgated Integrated Risk Information System, or IRIS, values that is less protective than California's value for cancer risk of 1 times 10 to the minus 6. Director Wheeler's decision was to use the existing California toxicity values established in the Record of Decision signed in September of 2007. So that was a big win for us. The second project I want to call your attention to is barstow perchlorate. This accomplishment was led by Bill Muir and Alonzo Poach, engineering geologist and project manager for this project. As you may recall, we applied for and received a grant of $2.67 million from the Site Cleanup Subaccount Program, or SCAP, to fund cleanup at this orphan site in 2018. Site characterization work at the source area property was conducted in May and June of 2019 by our contractor, Aptum, and included the sampling of soil and groundwater. The site characterization report included recommendations for evaluations of remedial alternatives. Aptum is currently developing a focused feasibility study, or a focused FS, and full-scale remediation work plan to address remaining soil contamination at the site. The focused FS and remediation work plans are expected to be submitted second quarter this year, 2021. The third one for 2019 was for our wastewater and agricultural program. Mr. Jahail Kass, or Jay Kass, is the senior wastewater resource control engineer, and he leads our wastewater and agricultural program unit. At the request of board member Sandell, during the July 2019 board meeting, Dr. Woon-ho Kim, now a former staff, prepared a staff report to examine the role of contaminants of emerging concern, or CECs. Mr. Kass then presented the staff report to the board in September of 2019. Other presenters included Laura McClellan, senior environmental scientist from the State Water Board, and Dr. Elaine Kahn, senior toxicologist from the Office of Environmental Health Hazard Assessment. The staff report examined three basic questions and outlined next steps for us to address the CECs, including a recommendation for the State Water Board to expand scientific studies regarding CECs, coordinate CEC-related activities with the State Water Board, other regional water boards, and other agencies, and review work plans and associated submittals required under Section 1. Facilities investigating PFAS contamination in our region. We expect to keep you apprised of the results of the PFAS investigations as they go forward. Next slide, please. All right, 2020, starting again with the land disposal program, the Briggs Mine revised WDR's permit was brought to you in May of 2020 by Tiffany Steiner, engineering geologist for the land disposal unit. DV Natural Resources owns the Briggs Project, a gold and silver mining operation located in Panamint Valley, north of Trona. The permit authorized the use of bioleaching as an additional method to extract metals from the heap leach pads at the site. The bioleaching process also helps to detoxify the cyanide that was previously used on the heaps to extract the metals. In addition, the permit required DV Natural Resources to begin an evaluation monitoring program to determine the source and extent of releases of weak acid dissociable cyanide concentrations to groundwater. Although other regional boards have allowed bioleaching for metals extraction, this permit is the first time that this method was authorized in the Lahontan region. And of course, I couldn't just choose one because I think this is a significant accomplishment for us. The core program review for the land disposal program brought to you by Ms. Christina Guerra, engineering geologist in your Victorville office, who is also the program manager for the land disposal program. Of note is the comparison in the staff report of Lahontan staff resources, currently 3.2 PYs, for our 90 permitted sites that allow staff to spend an average of only 74 hours per year per site, as compared to other regions that average 139 hours per site. Not to be daunted by these statistics, however, we included strategies to help manage our program and key recommendations in the staff report. Back to our DOD and site cleanup program, Mr. Muir and Mr. Poach, along with a huge assistance from Sandra Lopez, our associate government programs analyst in our administration staff here in Victorville, together worked with State Water Board staff and Division of Financial Assistance to extend available funding from the cleanup and abatement account funds to provide financially qualified residents impacted by the Barstow perchlorate plume with replacement drinking water in February of 2020. Funding to provide disadvantaged community members of the Soap Mine Road area with drinking water, safe drinking water, is being obtained currently to run through June 20th of 2023. Interesting side note, we have consistently been able to provide such bottled water to these residents since the perchlorate contamination was discovered in 2010. Another accomplishment for my DoD unit was brought with the assistance of Linda Stone, engineering geologist in the unit, has to do with the Air Force and their contractors completing a non-time critical removal action to remove lead contaminated soil at a small arms range on the former George Air Force Base in August of 2020. The site is located in the southeast disposal area, southeast of the former main base near the Bureau of Prison site in Victorville, and is approximately 1/2 mile from a nearby residential housing tract. The removal action objective was to prevent human contact by maintenance and routine workers, construction workers, and residents via ingestion, dermal contact, or inhalation with soil that exceeded the limits, and achieving site closure. The action was completed in an expedited manner and consisted of excavating the lead contaminated soil, stabilizing the soil with a cement soil mixture, then transporting it offsite for disposal at a properly licensed facility. The removal action is documented in an memorandum similar to a record of decision, except that only the lead agency, in this case, the Air Force, signs that document. State and federal agencies were able to provide guidance on applicable regulations and comment on the document if necessary. The action memo is also circulated for public comment. Last but not least, wastewater and ag program. Want to talk about the Bishop Area Wastewater Authority, or BAWA. And Mr. Cass, this is in his unit. I want to say this is quite an accomplishment. After 4 decades of encouraging, entreating, cajoling, and discussing by many former and current Lahontan staff members, the timing was just right for the City of Bishop and the Eastern Sierra Community Service District to form the Bishop Area Wastewater Authority, or BAWA, Joint Powers Authority. The BAWA JPA will manage effluent disposal generated from each wastewater treatment plant through irrigating pasture land that the City of Los Angeles Department of Water and Power has agreed to sell them. Water Board staff were instrumental in encouraging and bringing all of these agencies together to help solve this apparent dilemma. And just to be clear, though, the City of Bishop and Eastern Sierra CSD will still collect and treat wastewater within their individual plant systems, while the BAWA provides a single entity for managing the disposal of the wastewater in the Bishop area. That concludes my presentation. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to Scott Ferguson. Can we have the next slide, please?
Good morning, board members. My name is Scott Ferguson, and I'm the division manager of your regulatory and cleanup division. And the division includes the regulatory enforcement unit out of South Lake Tahoe, your cleanup site investigation enforcement unit that covers the entire region, and the Leviathan Mine Unit. And as with the two divisions that you've already heard from and our admin staff, the division has also been very busy over the past 2 years. Some of the major accomplishments include, for our site cleanup program, in 2019, we were awarded a $4.6 million grant and oversight of the associated contract to investigate the nature, the extent, and impacts of the South Y PCE groundwater contamination in South Lake Tahoe. And this contamination is thought to be affecting an area of about 400 acres and has affected municipal wells for 3 different water districts. So it is a high priority, high visibility, critical project that staff has been working on. Accomplishments with this project begin in 2019 and carrying over into 2020. Staff has overseen the advancement of 57 cone penetration tests, which are critical to evaluating the underlying geology and hydrology, 22 sonic borings, each up to a depth of 300 feet, sampling of 9 private and small community wells, and development of a potential source inventory that included sending out and following up on over 230 investigative orders. Staff's also overseen the proper destruction of Lucan's Well number 4, which had been identified as a vertical conduit for PCE contamination. Abby Kazir is our project manager on this project, and she has done a tremendous amount of work keeping the project on schedule and completing tasks. And she has gotten support from Brian Gray, Jim Carolyn, and Jeff Brooks. Staff in the division's also been working on local agency management plans, specifically in 2019 was the Alpine County Local Agency Management Plan, or LAMP. And this is one of two LAMPs that affecting the North Lahontan Basin that were assigned to the Lahontan Water Board. And developing LAMPs is an option for counties and cities to manage use of on-site wastewater treatment systems, or typically septic systems. And it's allowed under the State Water Board's on-site wastewater treatment system policy. Water Board member Trevor Miller was responsible for working with county staff to ensure that the LAMP complied with the state policy for the entire county. And Alpine County straddles the Sierra Crest. So Trevor found himself doing an excellent job of coordinating with all parties on both sides of the Sierra Crest, bringing all the pieces together for the LAMP and having the county and the Water Board approve it in 2019. At the same time, Trevor was also working with Lassen County on its LAMP. Again, a county that straddles the Sierra Crest, requiring Trevor to work with stakeholders on both sides of the crest and the Central Valley Regional Board. And he was able to subsequently bring this LAMP before you after it was approved by the county and it was approved by the Water Board in 2020. So a lot going on, and kudos to Trevor on bringing those across the finish line. The final project I'd like to talk about for 2019 was our SEGS 1 and 2 solar facilities closure waste discharge requirements that were adopted. And this is an example of where your staff worked with a discharger to develop a final site closure plan that incorporated climate change mitigation and economic savings while continuing to protect water quality. John Studi of your staff was able to confirm that the facility's waste could be safely disposed of permanently on site instead of being hauled off site for disposal as was originally proposed by the discharger. The result was a significant reduction in greenhouse gas emissions by eliminating the need to haul waste significant distances off site, and he accomplished this also while still protecting water quality. Next slide, please. Looking into 2020, another busy year. And as you have heard on multiple occasions, we have been making significant progress on our backlogged formal enforcement actions. And this is largely due to the technical assistance that Wendy Wiles with the State Water Board's Office of Enforcement has been providing the Lahontan Water Board staff. This slide identifies two major enforcement actions that were completed in 2020, and they are two examples of what is being accomplished through the implementation of the Water Board staff's recommendation to obtain technical assistance from the State Water Board's Office of Enforcement to augment our very limited enforcement dedicated resources. So since we don't have much in the way of enforcement dedicated resources, it really limits our ability to make progress. We have not been able to secure additional resources. So this has been a very effective stopgap measure that has allowed us to continue to make progress, significant progress. This recommendation was one of 10 recommendations provided to the Lahontan Water Board during its 2019 annual enforcement program update. And in addition to Wendy, I also want to share my appreciation or acknowledge David Boyers and Yvonne West at the Office of Enforcement who have made this recommendation a reality. Leviathan Mine was a very busy place in 2020. They saw a significant increase in the maintenance activity in response to our aging infrastructure. Our pollution abatement project is now over 35 years old, and our pond water treatment system is now over 20 years old. Just to give you an idea, the pond water treatment system was first thought about or was first put into place as a two-year-old pilot project. They're both beginning to show their age. So in addition to the routine annual maintenance work that we typically do of fence repair, BMP repair, stormwater ditch cleaning, staff oversaw an additional $175,000 in maintenance work involving the replacement of two pond overflow structures, replacing the channel under drain outlet pipe, and assessing the condition of the Leviathan Creek concrete channel and our pond water treatment system tanks. And this increased infrastructure maintenance will continue into the future until final remedial actions are constructed at the mine site. I'd like to acknowledge the work that Darren Witt, Taylor Zentner, their supervisor Kathy Poole, and specialists Chris Stutler and Doug Carey all put into this effort and will continue to do so going into the future. It all helps us continue to protect water quality out at the Leviathan mine site and comply with our US EPA orders. One more thing that happened on the Leviathan mine front that was a critical achievement, and that was the work that Hannah Bartholomew put in to developing a resolution for the State Water Board to adopt. And the purpose of this resolution was to increase the allowable contract period from 3 to 5 years and the contract amount for Leviathan mine contracts from a total of $750,000 per year to $1 million per fiscal year over the life of a contract for Leviathan mine. And upon its adoption by the State Water Board, Hannah instantly put it into use by renewing our contract with USGS, who does our surface water and pond level monitoring. And by getting this put into place, we now have a 5-year contract instead of a 3-year contract. And with the increase in the contract value, we were able to replace old flow monitoring equipment and data transmission equipment. And so we are upgrading our facilities, our monitoring, and as we are also doing a lot of new maintenance work out there. So thank you to all the staff involved with these efforts. Finally, I just want to give a shout out to Rob Tucker and Russell Norman for the tremendous effort they put forth in developing and putting on the informational workshop for the Lahontan Water Board regarding the Tahoe Keys Property Owners Association's proposed aquatic invasive plant control methodology test project. This was provided to you this past November, and staff put in a tremendous amount of work so that they could provide presentations in addition to numerous other speakers who provided presentations, information, their concerns, their recommendations regarding a project proposal that involves testing multiple aquatic invasive plant control methodologies, including newer non-chemical methodologies and also herbicides. And that's targeting Tahoe Keys lagoons, which are a part of Lake Tahoe. And our staff are continuing to work on this project proposal with the intent of bringing it before you sometime this upcoming fiscal year. So that's what I would like to talk, wanted to share with you. And in closing, I want to just express my appreciation of all the staff in the division and across the board and the work that they accomplish each and every day. They are an incredible group of people and that are protecting our water resources. So thank you to all of them. And with that, I will turn it back over to Ben.
Next slide, please. Thanks, Scott. Before sharing the administrative specific accomplishments on this slide, I would first like to point out that the accomplishments detailed on the previous slides at the divisional levels are also administrative accomplishments. Every single one of them, admin staff are behind the scenes, and partners with tech staff and management on the region's key efforts and are instrumental in achieving the regional goals and are part of the regional accomplishments. The first accomplishment for administration is that we are producing ADA accessible versions of the documents that we post on our public websites. This involves designing and coding our documents so that people with disabilities can use assistive technology to perceive and navigate our documents. Learning this program and programming skills requires a steep learning curve, and producing documents that meet ADA standards is an extremely time-consuming process, which we are achieving using just our existing limited staff resources. Every single admin person has been deeply involved in this process and is doing a great job. The second accomplishment is our transition to telework while maintaining functioning offices. Even though the majority of our office is teleworking, we still need to ensure that staff can access files, office equipment and vehicles are maintained, office supplies and personal protective equipment are available, our phones are answered, mail is delivered, Public Record Act requests receive timely resolution, and employees' needs are met. This effort also involved another software learning curve using Microsoft SharePoint for file sharing and real-time document collaboration. Our third accomplishment for administration is the change from in-person board meetings to meetings using the Zoom platform during the COVID-19 pandemic. These online meetings require a number of folks working behind the scenes and backstage to make sure everything runs smoothly and to help recover quickly when the inevitable glitches occur. I'd like to recognize Katrina Fleshman, Michelle Avila, and Mike Suligan that have been instrumental in assisting with meeting logistics, administrative support, and technical support for our meetings. That concludes updates, concludes accomplishments from our three divisions and administration. I'd like to give a virtual round of applause for admin staff and all the great accomplishments that we just shared with you from all the divisions. I can see Amy is doing that. With that, I'll hand it back over to our executive officer, Mr. Michael Plaziak. Next slide, please.
Thank you, Ben. All right. So our organization outlook for the region, it's looking good despite the challenges that we've faced over the past year. We have great staff and with innovative ideas and a lot of motivation. And so we've got a good outlook coming up. And here are some other things that are going to help work to staff's advantage and help staff to be able to thrive. We'll continue to implement the current work plan and address the performance targets and the regional objectives that we set out to accomplish this year. And we will continue to implement the Lahontan Region Action Plan and build on the four pillars of that plan. As the board recalls, the leadership, communication, process improvements, and building trust are the four main components, the main pillars of the plan. And we've made significant strides in all four pillars in only a few short months. For example, unit supervisors, division managers, the AEO, EO, have been introduced to the Prioritize Leader training program, which is designed to help us to better communicate, to build teamwork, and to establish a healthy and sustainable work pace and a thriving workplace. The Prioritize Leader concepts are now being implemented throughout the organization, and there's more work to do. The Lahontan team has accomplished the following since November of last year in just a few short months. All staff have been given the engagement survey, and that survey is to help us all have an increased understanding of the how and why of each of our staff. It's a survey. In fact, the survey was a link to that survey was sent out to board members last night. This information is for your information only, same for staff. They can share it if they want to or keep it, but it's basically the who and why of that staff person. And when we're able to, at the unit supervisor level, division manager level, AEO, EO, share those with our respective teams It really helps us to understand what motivates and what helps our teammates to be more productive and to be, you know, better people. And it's I think that engagement survey was a great start in terms of building communication and also towards that building trust pillar. Also, as a team, we've worked on a vision statement. All staff have been involved in that. We've worked on a mission statement as well. And this, all staff have been involved in the mission statement. And through that process, we've also developed a list of our values. And those values are those things that we'll use to hold ourselves accountable to each other and to our stakeholders. And lastly, we've worked on and we're continuing to work on a strategic narrative. And what the strategic narrative is, it tells a story about the past, the present, and future possibilities of our organization in a strategy context. It enables leaders to change the direction of an organization without disrespecting the hard work of past leaders and employees who invested in it. It also describes how we're going to align our resources to achieve those division objectives, which ultimately meet our regional goals. So this is ongoing right now. We are working through the division manager level to build a strategic narrative. Unit supervisors will take that and work with their staffs and coming up with focus of effort and those objectives that they're going to help support for each division. Ultimately, that's going to address our region's goals. Next slide, please. So, on to that topic, the regional board's goals. Slide 15 shows you these goals. I want to bring the key point of bringing up this slide is that these goals have been expressed to the board since 2014. They haven't changed. And each year, as you'll see in the first enclosure on Bates Stamp, page 10-7, is the key efforts under that umbrella of those four goals. And that was presented to you back in 2019 for the 2019-2020 fiscal year. So the point of bringing this up is that we haven't changed these goals. These goals are still what we're using to work under through this whole process of having a better process to develop these priorities to achieve these goals. So I just wanted to bring that up to the board that this hasn't changed. Now, over time, we may come back to the board and recommend some changes, maybe to be a little bit more focused. But for now, this is what we're working under. Next slide. So with respect to work plan development for this fiscal year, we have more work to do before we bring our priorities to the board. This slide lists some of the main steps before us. We'll complete those strategic narratives that I talked about in the previous slide during March and April. And then in April 1st, we have a third quarter work planning meeting. That would be all the division managers, unit supervisors, not only look at what our priorities, we're going to start talking about our priorities for the next fiscal year, but also see where we are with respect to our performance targets and other goals that we've set for ourselves this fiscal year. Also, we'll present our priorities to the board. And I know the slide says May, and I'm going to recommend that we look at either June or July timeframe. And here's why. The May schedule is packed. We've got a bunch of things that are on that schedule to meet those performance targets. Also, when you look at the board agenda package and the board agenda schedule, we've got to have information out. The package has to go out by April 28th. So that's about a little over a month from now, a month and a half, which is not enough time for us to go through all the strategic narratives and complete the training, the prioritized leader that we are going through right now. We're currently on the PACE module. There are five modules, and the unit supervisors, division managers, myself are now embarked and almost through with the second of those five modules, and that's PACE. So we've got some more training, some more practical application to go through during the month of April. And my fear is that bringing something to the board in May is not going to be fully cooked. So that is the one change and one note I wanted to bring up to the board in this slide. And to the next slide, please. So with all that's been said, we talked about the regional challenges. And like I said, I think that the future is bright for us. We like I said before, we've got a great team. We've got a great leadership coach. We've got a plan in front of us. And you know, looking back at the accomplishments that we've made over the last two fiscal years, there's no doubt in my mind that next fiscal year will be even better. So we'll come to the board. Like I said, I'd like to bring this to you either in June or July and let you see what our priorities are and what we've aligned our resources to achieve, what goals, and I should say what objectives and ultimately the goals that we intend to achieve during the fiscal year. Next slide. So that concludes the presentation, and we'd love to hear any comments or questions from the board. I'll open that up.
Thank you very much. That's a lot of stuff. You know, you spent the last year at least sitting in Chalfont thinking that the world had shut down, but it obviously hadn't, and certainly didn't for you guys. And it's a very interesting, very excellent presentation by everyone. Mr. Dias, do you have any questions or comments, please?
Yes, thank you, Chair Pumphrey. I have some questions for Patrice, if she's available, on her slide number 10.
Go ahead, Mr. Dias.
You mentioned that in 2020 we adopted the Briggs Mine waste discharge requirements. I for some reason I can't recall that. Can you remind me where that is located?
It's in the Panamint Valley, which is just north of Trona, near a little town called Ballarat.
Oh, yes, I know where that is. Thank you very much. Another question, another comment. In your last bullet on this same page, I like the way that you described the long-suffering effort our staff went through in convincing the people of Bishop to form their wastewater authority. I think this is a model of how we bring communities into compliance without being heavy-handed. So I congratulate you on your patience.
Thank you. It was, like I said.
And finally, I'd simply like to say.
Go ahead.
No, you, please, Patrice, what were you going to say?
I was just going to say that it was a group effort. It took four decades of discussions with the various folks. And I think it was a credit to the people there now that the timing was right for them to come together. And with the assistance, I have to lend credit to the board staff that brought all the entities together. And there's too many to mention, including getting LADWP to agree to sell the land so that they could have an adequate area to discharge the effluent that's really going to improve water quality for the area.
Yes, you're right. The timing was perfect, and our staff took advantage of the opportunity. Great presentation, and great presentation by all of the other speakers. Thank you. No more questions.
Thank you, sir. Questions or comments, Dr. Horn, please?
Thank you. So first I want to say I have several thoughts in mind. I want to thank all the presenters for giving shout outs to the various staff members who worked on all these projects. And one of the most fun things about being on this board for me is our opportunity to get together at meetings and go on field trips and interact with each other and get to know each other. And I'm always thoroughly impressed with the quality of our staff. I think you all are fabulous, and I appreciate all the hard work you do. So it'll be great when we can all get back together again. Not questions about any particular program, but sort of more on the how things are going overall for the agency. So it's great to see us getting on a good track for getting accomplishments done, getting projects done and in the books. But I'm wondering what is being done to get closure on unresolved issues. I mean, that's one of the things that we learned about, the board learned about from the investigation, that that there's some need to attend to the mental and emotional health of the staff. And so I'm just wondering what's happening on that score.
Dr. Horn, I can answer that question. And certainly if other division managers have a thought on it too, I'd welcome that. But ultimately, what we are working through with going through the prioritized leader is setting a healthy pace for the organization. And that is to address, you know, through the tenets of that process, or that I should say that program, we're focusing on understanding our staff, being able to communicate better, to have a better teamwork building approach. And then we're now going through this process of establishing our vision, our mission, and our values. We're using those values, like I said earlier, to hold ourselves accountable and hold ourselves accountable to each other, but to our stakeholders as well. So we're building foundation right now. And ultimately, as we go through our strategic narrative and we start to address those goals that have been forefront from the board for years now, we're looking at how we can prioritize better. So those unresolved issues, be they unresolved issues with respect to a program or a performance target, we're looking at how we can prioritize within those values and within those goals, so that with our limited resources, we're addressing the key issues that get above that cut line each year. And certainly there are going to be some work that's going to go below the cut line. And that's going to be through that whole prioritization process. With respect to employee development and employee morale, to use that term, you know, this is also helping us to communicate better. And by through this process, we're looking at how we can be more communicative and how we can build an open and a more inviting environment. You know, we're working through the suggestion box process. We've got all staff meetings, and we're looking at every opportunity, which to include the board in, so that we're all starting to know each other. To your earlier initial comment, I think there was so much benefit when we as a board met. We used to meet every year in June. I remember back in the day, and I hope that we're going to be able to continue those in-person meetings when we get through this pandemic, because I think that the interactions are so important, understanding each other and having an ability to also celebrate each other. As you heard today, there's a lot of accomplishments just on the individual staff level that never get to rise up. So that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to build an environment. We've started this process in November. We got funding in October. We started the process in November. We've got a long ways to go, but I think we're going in the right direction.
Thank you. So it sounds like these new processes are going in the direction of as we go forward, avoiding creating new problems that fester for years. But I still haven't heard anything about resolving lingering old issues, and it's not related to a particular program or a particular product of the board. It's having to do with management of staff, how people feel about things, that kind of stuff. So it's a little squishier, but somehow attention needs to be paid to that, to kind of spotlight some of those issues and resolve them, get closure on them for people. And related to that is, as you go through implementing the action plan, what are you doing to get buy-in of the entire staff?
Well, on a couple of levels. One, we have shared this action plan with staff. And also through the prioritized leader, we're working on those pillars of the action plan through those, through the communication that we're building. The engagement survey was part of that, through working on leadership training, how we can be better leaders, and also how we can prioritize more effectively. Because one of the things that we're, go back to a lingering issue, is we have more work than we can do. We recognize that, but we've not had a process in place to be able to prioritize and put things below the line efficiently and with all staff buy-in. That's part of it. You know, staff, we're opening up our dialogue and having the conversations at the division level, at the unit supervisor level, with staff to kind of formulate what needs to come above the cut line and whatnot. And to help staff know, by working through this process, you know, giving them the empowerment to go and make some decisions at their level, so that they're not constrained by worrying about that particular project or issue not getting addressed, that they've got top cover from the entire organization to know that particular thing is not going to be done this fiscal year, and it's okay, because you've got bandwidth that is finite. And recognizing that, and that's what we're working through in this process, to try to build that decision-making process and trying to push that down to the lowest level, so that people can to make those decisions and they can feel okay about making those decisions, knowing that it's not going to get done, but it's the reality. You know, I think you'll see that there are a number of projects that have been teed up and have not come across the finish line. But it's one of these things that it's been a lingering issue for staff, and not seeing things come to fruition, knowing that it's still there. But they need to have some kind of a dialogue, and that we're establishing that dialogue to be able to prioritize and be able to say, okay, it's okay to let some of those things go. So that helps with the pace. And then that pace helps with the quality of life, because quality of life, you know, we're blessed that we have all of our 81 staff, that their families let us have them for 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. But they've got to go back to their families, and they need to be able to have that time with family, time away from work, and not be worried about, well, that thing that I couldn't get to because nobody's taken it off my plate and it's still my responsibility. We've got to help them with that, so that we're not seeing staff burnout, which is a concern.
Yeah. So in sharing documents and ideas with staff is not, in my experience, necessarily going to result in individuals having buy-in with what ideas that are developed at the management level. And there are some really innovative and creative minds on the staff, very smart people all up and down throughout the staff. And I think process improvements in particular are something that the more minds involved, the better the result. I mean, you know, you have to put a limit on it in terms of not taking too much time away from responsibilities and getting work done. But getting the buy-in from everybody throughout the staff is essential. And I think for that to happen, each individual has to have an opportunity to roll up their sleeves and contribute to the evolution of the action plan. And then yesterday, when we were talking about the climate change strategy or action plan, you know, it's clear that really developing a coherent approach across all the programs to addressing climate change is going to require people working together across programs in teams on particular projects, such as was done in the irrigated lands report. That was fabulous, that I really appreciated in our January meeting. But so I still haven't heard an answer there about if you're forming cross program teams, and maybe I want to hear from Ben on this. If you're forming cross program teams and somebody who's leading that team doesn't have supervisory authority over all the members of the team. I mean, so something has to shift so that somehow, you know, the work that's being done on this cross-program team, that the supervisor of the people who are on the team that are not answering to the team leader on that project understands that that work is important and that deadlines are, you know, meaningful. I mean, there has to be some sort of coordination or some other way of doing things than the traditional sort of hierarchical chain of command program silo way that we've done things in the past. So I still haven't really heard how you might address that in the future. Is Ben still on the line? Yeah.
There you go. I'll take another swing at that one. I think I swung, maybe I missed yesterday. So one idea is to, you know, to have a project sponsor for those bigger type of projects. It's a pretty traditional way of managing large projects where you have a project sponsor. We do that when we, at the executive level, when we work with the state board and other regions as well. And so we'll just pick that example you provided, Amy, with the Irrigated Ag Program. I was the project sponsor for that. And so it's important for me, you know, as that project sponsor to be very clear, you know, in a project charter, you know, for the team, exactly what's being asked in terms of the scope, the schedule, the timeline, that type of thing. And also who needs to be involved. So in that case, I needed to reach out to Patrice, you know, and work with her on sort of the scope and the outline for that project and make sure that she was, you know, on board with it, and that I would probably be at times, our staff would be collaborating and asking line staff and seniors to do specific tasks. And so that's about the best I can answer it, is that it really requires, you know, an agreed upon set of goals for the project, you know, a really defined scope. So scope creep doesn't occur, which is a big problem for those types of projects. That we're clear on roles and responsibilities of everybody, that we have good milestones and timelines, and that we have regular scheduled meetings and check-ins. That's about all I can really offer there, you know, in terms of how you address that that issue that you're describing, where you have lots of people working on something in a team. Sometimes, you know, people are at the same level in the organization. Sometimes they're at different levels, and how you try to avoid the problem of, you know, somebody directing somebody else's work who isn't their supervisor.
Okay. All right. I think that's
also to make that work, just to close that out,
one of those, when you're, as I've worked in that team kind of construct in the private sector, and one of the challenges that we'll have is that not everybody on the team is going to have the same funding code or funding source. And that's always a challenge with this organization. When we have so many pipelines, it drives us towards that kind of pipeline and that silo approach. So the team's concept is a great idea, a great way to get us out of the silo kind of mentality and see the region and see our teammates as teammates. But it's a challenge when you're trying to figure out how to pay for that. And that is the only one thing there. But also, I'd say in this approach, a good training on project management is also for those project sponsors who aren't familiar or aren't at the division level to have that experience. And that's another place where we can take them through our performance appraisals and their individual development plans and looking where we want people to be so they can step into a sponsor role.
So what creative ideas do you have for getting around the funding code problem?
Well, I think that is going to be specific to a problem that we're looking at. I can't really give, it depends. I'm sorry to give you a vague answer like that, but it's going to depend on the problem we're trying to solve and which people we need for that project.
Yeah. I'm just trying to get more of a sense of as the work that we need to accomplish requires maybe a different way of doing business. What are the obstacles that still stand in the way and how do we get around them? You know?
Yeah. And maybe the answer is too, of a longer planning horizon. And that is, let's just MPDS. We have 1.2 PYs of MPDS work. And you know that Lake Tahoe is a huge time sink on that one. But what about Mono Lake? And what about all the other wastewater treatment plants that have a discharge to a surface water? All those. I think that maybe the solution on that is looking to, put a BCP together and make a case for expanding the resources. I know that's a longer term type of a solution, but if we're looking at a demand signal that we need to respond to, and there are pretty important demand signals, not just in that one task code, but in others, if we have a task that needs to be done, and in the case of Tahoe, it's urgent because of the aquatic weeds infestation issue and some others, there's a lot of work that needs to be done. And so we do need to be creative, and we've got to work too. And I would expect that myself and the AEO to work really closely with State Board defining where there is wiggle room within those task codes so that we can be creative and making the pitch to get the resources that we need in those particular vulnerable areas.
Well, that sounds encouraging. I think this is the beginning of a discussion between the staff and the board, and I hope we can continue having a conversation about this as we go forward. That's all.
Mr. Jardine?
Yes, I just wanted to see who all within the Lahontan Board staff is familiar with the Truckee River Operating Agreement, the Walker River Operating Agreement, and the Alpine Federal Court Decree. These are all, waters flowing into Nevada, and I just wanted some kind of familiarity. And one last thing is the Carson Water Subconservancy District, their latest newsletter came out with a Carson River Mercury site map. And I don't know if you're familiar with that. Ed James with the Carson Water Subconservancy District is the best person to talk with regarding all these issues. Anyways, that's it from Don.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Sandell.
Good morning. I was very pleased to see all the staff that was named during the reports from the division heads. Some of the names I think I know, but there were a few that I don't think I've heard before. So I'm glad to see them giving credit where it was due. Mike, what's the due date? When is the prioritized leader program, all modules, going to be completed by down to the lowest staff level, approximately?
All right. So there are five modules. The unit supervisors have two. They're almost done with the second one, which is the process module. They're going to get the third module, which will be people, and the division managers. And so they should complete that one probably by the end of April. And the division managers and myself, the AEO, are getting the last two modules, which are, I had them written down here for the modules, but those will be done probably in another couple of months. So we're probably talking about, you know, mid-July-ish. I know the current modules that we're working through, the PACE module, the second one, that is, like I said, that's culminating with the strategic narratives that are being developed by the division managers and the unit soups. And that will ultimately dovetail into our unit work plans when we have that discussion on April 1st. So I know the contract with our coach ends on April 12th. And, you know, we're looking at ways that we can extend that because we've got, you know, a couple more modules. So that's a contracting issue we'll take care of. But as far as the actual modules go, unit soups are going to get three modules. Division managers, AEO, EO are getting the five. This is all we're setting up our priorities and our pace for this organization, our values, et cetera, et cetera. And the staff have gotten the engagement survey and are being brought into through the unit supervisors and division managers are being, you know, they're collaborating and they're going to be brought into more of a role in developing those strategic narratives and those unit work plans and those individual work plans. So that's how that's all going to place. The staff aren't necessarily going to be receiving the coursework that the unit soups are, but they're getting the benefit as the unit soups go back to their units and talk and discuss what they're learning and implementing that, putting that into practical application. So that's how that's going to occur on a educational sense. That's the timeline. So I'm thinking probably July timeframe is when we'll conclude the formal training. But once we've established this process, it's ongoing. We're going to have quarterly meetings talking about our work plans, talking about our goals and our values, you know, making sure that everything is still checking in, that we've got line of sight, as they say, from those values all the way up to our regional goals. So at some point we may come back to the board with some recommendations to change those goals, you know, to make them more applicable or maybe more defined. But that process is going to be a living process. It will continue on. If that answers your question, Mr. Sandell.
Well, the idea seems to be that we bring management down to the staff level in a manner that's appropriate for the work that they're doing. And also in a way that encourages them to move up in the organization as they become more competent and experienced. I was curious, you mentioned that staff having the ability to decide what's above the line, what you could cut out of your work assignment. Does that go all the way down to staff level? And if they do that, how is that supervised to make sure that we know what's going on, or, you know, that management knows what's going on?
Right. With every organization, good leadership leads the organization, and the organization is good when there's good leadership. You've got great staff. if we are being good leaders, and if we are giving staff good guidance, and we're what I call painting the lanes in the road. If I'm painting that lane in the road, I don't need to tell staff how to get from point A to point B. They know how to get there, and they've got discretion within those lanes to make those decisions. And if those decisions, with the values and our priorities as we're setting them, we're establishing the lanes in the road. That's really, the graphical way to describe it. And with that, this whole process of going through the strategic narrative, coming up with our priorities, they'll know, oh, I've got a new thing that just came in. I know where that fits because of the lanes that have been painted. And so I can make a decision. That's something I think that's very powerful, is when you can put that decision-making process down at the lowest level. And like we said, tap into that ingenuity, the innovativeness, and the skill sets of the people that are making things happen. Things start to go exponentially. You start to see organizations start to move at a faster pace, making better decisions, and there's a better communication. So that's the ultimate goal that we're trying to achieve here.
So that would mean that if staff makes a decision based on knowing what's going on in the organization, then management's going to stand behind what they've decided, because they will have decided based on being part of a team and knowing what's going on, because management's been telling them all along. So exactly. It should never rise to the point of being an issue.
Yeah. Exactly.
What's happened with the suggestion box? Anything coming in into that yet?
Yes, they are. In fact, the collaboration team is working. Actually, we're automating the suggestion box. It's getting traction, and we're getting suggestions that have come in. And our intent is each all staff meeting, we are going to go through those suggestions, and we're going to continue with a matrix, and we'll talk about which ones are still outstanding, which ones have been solved, because some have long-term solutions, some have short.
Yeah.
Yes, the collaboration team's been working on that. Ben's been working on that, taking the lead on that, doing a great job of making sure that it doesn't lose momentum.
Great. I think that's all I have. Thanks a lot, Mike. It's been a really good presentation.
Thank you for your questions.
Thank you. First of all, I echo the previous comments. I really appreciate the fact that individual staff members were acknowledged for the work that they've done on these accomplishments. And I know, of course, that that's not an exhaustive list, because everybody in the organization has contributed to this, but it is really nice for me to hear who was involved. Sometimes it helps me put names with faces, or names with things that I've seen in written materials, and just makes it all seem a bit more real. And it's also, I think, really important that we understand the good work that people have done for us. So I appreciate that greatly. And I would ask those of you from the management staff that are here to please communicate back to all of those people and everybody else on the staff how pleased we are and how proud we are of the work that they were able to do, that you have highlighted for us today. We don't get to see everybody personally, and especially we don't get to see anybody personally for the last year or so. And that's been really difficult, but if I could, I'd go to everybody on the staff and tell them, thank you for the good work that you've done for us. I know it's been difficult, and it's really appreciated. So if you could extend that feeling and sense to people, I would greatly appreciate it. And I know, I think I'm comfortable in saying that I speak for the board, that we all would be very happy knowing that that's been communicated to them. I want to thank you for including the discussion of the action plan in terms of accomplishments, because it's kind of outside the normal context that we think of accomplishments in a programmatic kind of a way. But I think that given all of the circumstances that we found ourselves in just prior to the descent of COVID, And that huge disruption, that the action plan, figuring out what it is, which we seem to have done, thanks in great part to you and the people that you've been working with at the state level, and implementing that plan is a huge priority for the coming year. And so I'm glad that that was put out there. In part, I'm glad because it encourages the board to think about these kinds of issues. And I commend and thank Dr. Horn for raising some of the concerns that she has. I'll be the first person to acknowledge that I'm not sure all the time exactly what the problems are, and problems is probably not the right word, but what the situation is that might be being described. And I think in part, one of the ways to remedy that is for us to have an opportunity to drill into that specifically, that area specifically, rather than find our way into it as a part of a discussion of a larger board issue. And so my suggestion is going to be this. I would suggest that we have our discussion of priorities and the coming work year plan in June, and that we do that as a part of a board meeting in which that is the only item on the agenda. I have for a long time wished fervently that we could gather to just talk among ourselves with the support of our staff, as many staff as is reasonable, to talk about what we do, why we do it, and to see that we are on the same page about our understanding of what we're trying to accomplish. And I think that gets harder and harder every year, because the list of things we're asked to do, and by we, I mean you guys, that are being asked to do gets bigger, while the toolbox and the money box and the checking account gets smaller. And it makes it harder and harder every year to think that we all really understand what it is that you are facing in trying to steer this ship. And so I would suggest, and invite comment from other board members, that we look at all of this, including the action plan and the kinds of things that Dr. Horn talked about, in a standalone June meeting, and that we be prepared to spend several hours actually kind of wrestling with this question. I think that all too often the question of work plan, of priorities, it falls towards the end of the agenda. Everybody has done the good work that we need to do month by month, project by project. But I'd like to see us really focus on that. And I'd like to see that that conversation mirror the conversation that we've had here this morning in terms of your presentations, as well as the response of the board to that. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to go back through the board members who've had a chance now to hear each other's comments and see if they have anything else to say, as well, of course, as invite your comments about the feasibility of what I've suggested. So, Mr. Diaz, anything further?
Yes, thank you, Chair Pumphrey. I agree with your approach regarding priorities. I think it'd be very worthwhile to devote an entire meeting to the subject. So I support that. And thank you for the opportunity to comment. I have nothing further to say. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Dr. Horn?
Yeah, well, you know, for a long time, we have struggled with how we could do strategic planning as a board and staff combined. And we've never figured out a way to do that. And maybe this is maybe we're using different words for kind of the similar idea. And it occurs to me, I think it would be really interesting to have at least part of that meeting be a workshop format where we break out into, different tables the way we did with our early meetings on climate change, and just brainstorm different things. And, you know, give board members a chance to really listen to staff members, individual staff members, and, you know, hear, it might help us come up with ideas in the larger context that might be helpful to the agency as well.
Can I interrupt the flow of things? I know you might not be done, but I'm just wondering, because if we broke into discrete groups like that, which I think is a great idea, we wouldn't necessarily be constrained by the Brown Act, because there would not be a quorum or a majority of board members participating in any given roundtable. And I see Elizabeth's face in front of me, so I'm trying to walk on this thin ice. But would it then be possible maybe to even do those kind of roundtable breakouts in advance of the June meeting, so that there would be more time for both situations, and we could convene that without having to have that be a publicly noticed meeting, because the number of board members involved would not equal three or more?
I think that could be a possibility. If it was at a scheduled board meeting, we would have issues with the breakouts, because a member of the public wouldn't be able to participate in both breakouts at the same time. But maybe there are opportunities to get engagement ahead of the meeting, like you suggested, and present that in writing or some sort of summary, or make the recordings available. So I can work with Mike Plasiak and Bed Lempton and trying to come up with creative ways to allow for that breakout setting.
Could it be as simple as subcommittees of the board doing that, doing these breakouts?
It could be a committee. A committee under Bagley-Keene has certain requirements in terms of noticing and making it available to the public as well. So it would probably be maybe not an official committee, but rather fewer board members.
Well, yeah, fewer than a quorum. Mm-hmm. And there's no reason why we couldn't record them in case the public wanted to look at them maybe in real time or later.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's a possibility. We'd have to engage in on the technical side, but I'm sure we can resolve that.
Yeah, I don't know that the Zoom or Teams platform provide for real-time splitting off into various sessions and then being fluid in how you bring them back together.
Zoom does. I know that Zoom does. I've participated in like that. I don't
really?
Know.
Okay.
They were able to do that during WQCC, for example. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Didn't know that.
So I'm sorry, Amy, I didn't mean to interrupt, but I hijacked you, an idea.
No, I pretty much said what I had to say, but as I think about this somehow, well, I have a couple other thoughts. I don't know if this is something we could get the Office of Public Participation involved in helping us figure out how to structure this, what kind of, you know, prompt questions to ask to prompt discussion, that kind of stuff. I mean, it's a little outside their bailiwick, but gosh, if Gita were still around, she could do a bang-up job helping us figure out how to organize something like that. And the other thing is, as we figure out how to do this, it has to be done in a way that staff feels safe sharing their ideas. So I don't know. I mean, recording it, making it public, I don't know that works necessarily. You know, maybe not having managers in the same meeting, in the same breakout with people who report to them, you know, those sorts of things. It would be the most useful if we could figure out how to make it to really encourage discussion and dialogue.
Thank you. Mr. Jardine, any other thoughts?
No other thoughts. I let me see, going over my notes. Just my one comment on the Carson River Mercury site. That's in a document by the Carson Water Subconservancy District. And other than that, everything's good.
Thank you. Mr. Sandell, any?
I've already jumped in. I don't really have anything more to add. I really like the idea of smaller groups working on perhaps individual tasks and then bringing that all to the larger group and hashing it out further and doing that all in June. Perhaps, you know, if it works for other things on our agenda and that we have the time for it, I think that would be fine.
Well, my hope is because we hadn't planned as part of our calendar to have a June meeting, that would let us not have to be constrained by any other agenda items when we do this, so that, you know, we could set aside whatever time it takes. What I would then maybe ask Mike, if you guys could certainly reach out to board members if you need to, but give some thought to how we might do this kind of a meeting and get back to us at our May meeting and give us a heads up about, you know, what it looks like so that, you know, we have an opportunity to just maybe throw in a couple ideas before we actually kick it off in June.
Yes, I've got that for action. I'm making a note right now. So we'll bring something to you in May.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much. And again, thank you to everybody on the staff, the people who made presentations today, and everybody who supported those and made those presentations possible. You all are great people. You do great work, and it's a pleasure and a source of pride to be associated with your work and get to claim it as much as I can get away with. So. So thank you very much. I believe that concludes our meeting for this month. And I look forward to seeing you in May. Thank you all.
Thanks, Peter.
Thank you, Chair Pumphrey.
Take care, everybody.